Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Welcome to this week's Bagel Tech Photo. The second time we've done it around because Ewan forgot to hit the recorder button. But hey, it's okay. It's the miracle of tape.
So much for keeping that one quiet then.
I'm your host, Kyle Swagger. A little bit, I don't know. It must be the medication I'm on this week, but feeling pretty good. And speaking of medication, our first pro photographer is definitely on a lot of medication, Mr. Alex G. Fox. How are you, Alex? Down with the weather a little bit.
Yeah, I'm cool. I'm a bit coldy, a bit grumpy, but I'm with my favourite two fellas, so I've got no worries in the world.
With my homies.
Yeah, with the homies. And that one guy speaking there in the background, who I don't know what kind of medication he's on. I'm surely something, Mr. Ewan Rankin. How are you, Ewan?
Amphetamines, actually. Yeah, I'm fine.
Maltesers.
And Maltesers. Well, it's a heady mix.
You're on something because you forgot to press the record button.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Time we've done it around. But I had to point that out because you're the pro. And so it's funny.
Well, I'm a pro photographer, not pro audio. You're the pro audio. So there we go. Right.
No, but this is video, so it really doesn't matter.
If we can
none of us are qualified.
If we can put that behind us and move on swiftly, please.
No, I cannot. No. I do want to get on to this week's news. First, though. The Bagel Tech Photo Group on Flickr right now, growing. We've got, would you say about 30 members? I haven't checked it out this week.
We got 20 or 30 members, yeah. It's doing well. And some brilliant pictures, absolutely fantastic pictures going up. Real good quality stuff. And I haven't boasted any.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I mean, I was going to say, this is the whole point behind it, is to get everybody involved that listens to the show. And do check it out. It's Bagel Tech, or Bagel Tech Photo. It's flickr.com/groups/Bagel Tech Photo. And you can get head on over there. You can post what you see. No nudity, please. It's been clean so far. We want to keep it that way.
Yeah. So showcase your work. Just showcase your work and take part. We're going to do monthly assignments as well, and we've done one for this month, which is reworks of classic album covers, which one of the members, Aaron, picked up as being this week's assignment. So you've got to do a rework of a classic album cover, and I haven't done mine, but I'm doing it this week for definite.
I know I'm doing mine. I know exactly what I'm going to do. It's right up my alley. It's the Beatles' White Album.
Lazy git.
Hey,
I'm
going to
do the Beatles' Black Album. I'm just going to leave the lens cover on.
I never knew you were a Metallica fan, Alex.
Yeah, my kids are.
Strange things we find out. Speaking of things we found out this week, speaking of news, which is, again, well, I won't even say it's small because it always is small, but there is some nice news that did come out this week. And the perfect thing, if you're looking, I mean, this is something I'm looking to really upgrade to because I'm really liking the look of this new camera from Panasonic, the Lumix G3. We've seen it that was kind of leaking this week. We thought it was going to come out. Then it did come out. And there's a great review actually over at Tech Radar on the thing right now. Mm. It is a stunning camera. It's kind of what we wanted, the G1 to be and the G2. And they've kind of put both together on this thing, and they've really made it consumer, but yet pro friendly.
It is. I mean, I think the thing in terms of the styling here is they've kind of leapt the styling away from being the bridging camera kind of body shape, and they've looked at the more lower end DSLR market as being the body shape. It's got a very similar kind of outline to the Canons, you know, the kind of the 450Ds as they were, or the 300Ds, the old ones, and they're really, really good. I like the look of this. I really do like the look of it. You've got interchangeability of lenses. You've got a great processor in there. It could be really nice. Could be really nice.
It's got the viewfinder too, which is what the G2, I believe, is something you'd had to actually add on to it. This thing has already got it there. And Micro Four Thirds standard is built into the thing, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So you should get a good range of lenses out there to try and play with. But I think the only key point in this that I'd be cautious about is just the total price of it is, I can't find the price now. I did have it, but it's a, where's it gone?
I think it's around $700, isn't it?
Yeah, it strikes me as being a little bit towards the upper end of the market. I'll find it while Alex is talking.
I've got £629.
£629, that was right. But at 15 megapixels, they haven't gone stupid with the sensor. It's going to be a good quality sensor because it's Panasonic. And I was really impressed with the ISO ratings. They've gone right the way down and right the way up in the 6400 ISO. The quality is extremely good. Extremely good.
There's actually some nice features on there too that I noticed. I mean, you got, you know, the usual kind of enhancing color contrast features that are in there that you would see. Not, you would see it's kind of a pro feature about it, but it has the consumer, prosumer, as we kind of say on this show, ease of use to it, shall we say.
Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I quite like it. I think the, you know, it's a nice place in the market for them to sit. That, you know, they finally actually built something that which is sits nicely between the compact and the full size DSLR. And, you know, remembering that it's not trying to be anything that it's not. So everything, the compatibility within itself is going to work quite well. I mean, for someone, you know, in Carl's position, I'd say this is a very, very good place to go, because you've got the usability of the DSLR and the ease of the compact. So you're not necessarily worrying about, you know, all how to take the picture. You're going to spend the time framing, thinking about, and, you know, being creative with your shots. And this, without too much knowledge, is going to allow you to be creative. I think it's a nice, it's a good idea to sit in that part of the marketplace, you know, the part where you want slightly more of a compact, but you don't, you know, you don't want to have to sit and learn how to be a photographer. I think it's a nice idea.
But saying that, though, as a photographer, would this be something that you would pick up and use? Do you feel that it's up to the game?
You know, if they're bringing the quality of their compacts into something slightly bigger, slightly more expandable, if you like, you're going to be able to play around with your apertures and various things like that, which you really can't do properly on any compact camera. I think it's like giving you the ability to have a good DSLR, but without the complication of having to be a photographer to use it properly first. I think it really does sit in a really nice place.
There was something I was actually going to ask you, and I'll direct this to you, Ewan. When I was reading the article, I actually seen where it was saying that, you know, you can do 20 high quality JPEGs, 7 RAWs or simultaneous RAWs, and JPEG files that can be captured before the G3 slows down. Now, what exactly do they mean by that? I mean, you're telling me the more pictures I'm going to take to the SD card, the slower this camera is going to get?
They're probably talking about buffer there, aren't they? So they're suggesting that you can capture a large amount of images. They've increased the buffer size. So when you take an image, the processor has to then write that to the card. The card is probably the slowest component now in most cameras that you'd come across. The processors are getting a lot faster in the newer stuff. You've seen dual core come in this year as well as. Mm-hmm. So the chances are that what they're saying is they've applied quite a big buffer size to this for transfer to card. So even if you've got a fairly old SD card, the chances are you'll still be able to capture an awful lot of images before you start running out. And the camera says no, full.
I like the looks of it. I mean, when I first seen it, I was like, it makes me feel pro-ish. But it is a little expensive. I mean, but this is not your $400, $500 camera. This is, you know, the upper range, but it is below a Nikon, which is, you know, around what, the $1,000 mark right now for one of theirs, lower lines. Same with Canon. And we always talk about on the show how great a camera Panasonic makes with the Lumix line. So is the marriage good with the G, as they're saying here, is the marriage good with the G1 and the G2 now with the G3? I'll get your thoughts, final thoughts there, Alex.
Yeah, I think, you know, the other specs, you know, we use the phrase quite a lot that, you know, this is a, you know, this camera is, you know, it's a stepping stone. I think the G1 and the G2 were the stepping stone. I think with the G3, they've now landed on their feet. So like they did with the very early Lumix, you know, the small Lumix, you know, they had to find their feet, and then they produced excellent, camera after camera after camera. And I think this is the first part of their bridge range where they've now built a camera that I'd say, right, this is the benchmark now. Let's go forward.
I think the only thing that I would disagree with on the camera itself, it's a Lumix. We love Lumix at the moment. They're doing well with the processors. The image quality is fantastic. The onboard functionality for letting the camera take over is extremely good, rather than ruining the quality of photos, which some cameras can do. The fact that they've released this in a range of colours kind of switches me off a little bit for it. That kind of sends it a bit more towards the... the 30-somethings pro female, as in professional male, not pro photographer male, female. It's something that makes it a little bit more juvenile as a camera platform, and it detracts from it being a serious camera that people would take around with them and feel that they could. If I go out for a day, I want to take a camera with me that I think will do the job of capturing the family images and just having the fun stuff and being there for the moment. But if I turn around and I see something that I can take an image for stock, it's something that's going to be good enough quality to be able to shove that on the net. This has got those qualities, but the persona that it gives out doesn't make me feel that initially. And also, I think on the price range, at the price, I think it's about £100 too much. If they could pull the price down to 500, I think these things would sell like hotcakes.
Like 499.
499.
Like that.
499. Yeah. None of these would be left on the shelf.
Which it might well do. I mean, this thing was just released this week. And I see what you're saying about, it puts you off a little bit because there is certain colors out. But maybe that's also the market they're trying to hit. They're saying, hey, you, why go for this? Spend, a couple of $100 more. Get something that a pro would use. Let's face it, if it was only in black or if it was only in gray, would you be more enticed to buy one, Ewan?
No, I was saying that the change in colors is something that makes me believe it as a brand. It looks more juvenile. So it steers it away from me as a pro photographer. But I think what I'm saying is if you add another £100 to the price tag, you're stepping up to things like the Fujifilm that we looked at the other week. Now, on that kind of money, I'm sorry, but the Fujifilm's got more.
For a pro, maybe. But this is supposed to be towards this is supposed to be the blend, as you're saying, the perfect blend, though.
Yeah,
and
but it's
maybe
not.
The Fuji is not so much.
Well, that's the point. I think you talk about interchangeability of lenses. Well, interchangeability of lenses is something that's generally at the pro end market. And you look at the range of optical zoom that's currently available on other low end cameras at significantly less than the price on this. And then you say, right, well, I want image quality, and I'm going to look up to the next one up as being the Fuji film that we looked at the other week. The Fujifilm's got far more, but it's got no interchangeability of lenses. But it doesn't matter because it's a better camera for the job of going out and capturing the moment. This is where you start. If you're prosumer, if you're sitting right, I've gone past the ability of just shooting family photography for memorabilia. All I want to do now is shoot stuff that's more commercial that I could maybe make a bit of money out. I could add some stock photo. I could put some on Flickr that someone will go wow at. There's better cameras for this price.
I see where you're coming from. I see where you're kind of going there too. I mean, why? If you're going to act pro, then get a pro.
I think there is a bridge market, but I think it's £100 less than this camera.
All right. Good deal. Any final thoughts, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, move on. I can see where Ewan's going. I would say, though, the marketplace needs to be filled with competitors before the prices start to come down. So it's always going to be a good thing for the consumer that people like Fuji and Panasonic are fighting for the same area. I think Canon might enter. I don't think Nikon will. I don't think it's Nikon's game, but I think Canon might enter this area as well. And then let's see what happens.
Well, the kind of pro crossover line for Canon has always been the G series market, hasn't it? The G9 through G11, G12.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you look at those, they're firmly fixed as being compacts. They're not interested in being interchangeable lenses, and they give full pro functionality, and they're £150 cheaper than this camera.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing for the market. I think, this area of the market, it's always been underdone. I mean, funny, I mentioned it maybe a couple of months ago now, but when before DSLRs became, if you like, prosumer, other than the very, very top of the range cameras, this is more or less what you had. I mean, you didn't have interchangeability of lenses, but this is what you had. You either had very, very top of the range DSLR, you had pretty inadequate compacts, and this was the area that was in the middle. It then disappeared because people were able to make good compacts and good affordable DSLRs. Now it's coming back. I think this sort of is all to do with the way mirrorless technology is taking over. And I think this smaller form factor, etc., is the way that some of the consumer DSLRs will eventually end up being anyway, because they're going to be able to shrink the units down by the very factor that they're not going to have mirrors and various things. So, like I say, this is a good starting point, and I think it's going to force some of the others to, you know, enter it. But they might be in this, to me, is a compact that's been upgraded towards DSLR. I think the next thing will be the DSLRs that are going to be shrunk down into this range. So I think, like I say, I think it's a good thing that it's happened. It might not be the best end product that we're going to get, but I think it's a really good start.
I think you're going to, I think you're going to buy this camera, and I think if you go and check the eBay market in 6 months' time, there'll be a glut of these things on there, and whoever buys it will have it for 6 months, and then after that, we'll be eyeing up a D7000 equivalent.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's good points from you both. I mean, I see what Alex is saying. I think I agree. I think there needs to be a market for it. But I agree with what you're saying, Ewan, and the price does need to come down. I mean, they need to bring it like, well, you know, I could get a compact here that does really great photos from the Lumix line, or for $50 more, $100 more, I can get this and really, you know, start to show me the way of becoming maybe a pro. I see that point. But for the price it's at right now, you're probably right. If it does stay that and it doesn't have a price drop in the next 6 months, you probably will see them on eBay. I'll agree with that.
If anyone stopped me in the street and said, I can get a G3, or for £800, I can get a D7000, and I'm not even a Nikon man, I say the D7000 based on what I've heard Alex talk about it. Yeah. I wouldn't say go for this camera. You know, it's if you've got a choice within, you know, under £1,000, it doesn't figure.
No, well, no, I agree. The price is high. But to say that, if there is a few on eBay in 6 months' time for £200 or £300, I'll buy one.
Oh, yeah, agreed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Heck yeah, yeah.
And I'll post it to Kyle. Right.
Yay.
And he'll get it when the G7 comes out.
That's right. That's usually about that's the way it is here. Let's move on now to what we were talking about, compact cameras. And the one that caught my eye this week, because there was so much coming out from Panasonic this week, I just didn't want to flood the whole podcast with that. And this goes down to a 14 megapixel from BenQ, I believe it is. It's the E1465. Nice little stylish little camera here. You know, like I said, 14 megapixels. It does HD video, which is 720p, 2.7-inch LCD screen on the thing. So it's the screen could be a little bit bigger. But, you know, I have to say, when we're looking at the price point here, it's coming out, what, late May? And once again, I found I've lost the price. But while I look for the price, give me your thoughts, guys, on this camera.
Pricing's to be confirmed, mate. It's not...
Pricing's to be confirmed.
Mm.
Okay. I think it's a pretty little camera, actually. I think, it's the less is more approach to camera building. I like it. I it doesn't look like a piece of plastic that you'd get from, say, Nikon. I mean, one of the troubles I have with Nikon, anything sort of below a certain price range in Nikon is, you know, it's one thing to make it cheaper, it's another thing to make it look cheaper. And this here looks like a nicely built, it sort of has the look of a Leica. You know, it looks like it's been built nicely. And, there isn't a lot we can go on other than, you know, the specifications, and the specifications are fine.
You know, do we say the proof anything is in about the name,
the proof of the pudding's in the eating, of course, but the specifications look good.
Do we say something about the name, though? I mean, BenQ. You know, I've seen some BenQ stuff that they make a whole bunch of different products other than just cameras. I mean, you could say that it's the cheap Sony right now, maybe. I don't even know if I want to even go to that direction. But have any of you ever used a BenQ camera?
Nope. Never. And I won't be starting anytime soon. I think the chances are you'll find that inside this is probably Samsung components. They've BenQ are very, very good at tying up with big manufacturers. They've had big ties up with Siemens and Fujitsu on products. They've got to make up their mind whether they want to make cameras or phones or dishwashers or anything else. It's not a brand which strikes me as something I would even stop and look at the price of. As soon as I see BenQ and a compact camera, I'd move on to the next one. Now, that's my prejudice, and that's probably wrong of me, but that's it. Who cares? That's what the product. That's okay. What the consumer does.
Say you were walking through the store, BenQ, major sale going on, 50% off, factory's closing. You see this camera, which we have to say, it does look okay. It doesn't look cheap. Not like a lot of things you would see, even you know, some of the, I was going to say Casio and these kind of things that are out with the little compact cameras. $100, say, or say £89, would you take a second look?
I'd buy it for Ellis at £100.
That's exactly what I was thinking. This is a perfect thing to give to your kids.
Yeah, but this thing isn't going to come out at £100. See, BenQ, what are BenQ famous for?
Being BenQ.
No, monitors. BenQ are fantastic at monitors. They do great monitors, they make great monitors, and they are really not competitively priced monitors. They're usually towards the higher end. So, you know, in terms of the brand name, they're going to want to keep the brand name up. They don't want to see BenQ as a brand name go down towards the cheaper end market. This camera's never going to be £80 to £100. This camera's going to be £250 to £400, and it's too expensive by £150 at that point.
If it's £250, that's pushing it. If it's £450 or £400, no way. If it's £150, do you see a market for it then? You just said for the kids or, you know, the teenagers or something like this. I mean, what I was impressed about, it has a bit of a stylish look about it. 14 megapixels. I don't know what the size of the sensor is in the thing. And it does offer some, you know, onboard effects too. So obviously, again, we're not looking at the pros here. We're probably not even looking at prosumer here. You're just looking for the person that wants to whip out the camera, probably a good, decently priced camera. Don't you think that if it's 200 or more, they're going to lose that market? There's no way that this will even be successful.
Are you into the Panasonic comparisons then? If you go to a photo shop where you get decent advice rather than what's flavor of the month, like some of the high street places here in the UK, they won't steer you towards this. They'll steer you towards the Lumix.
Alex, anything to add? I mean,
agree with you know what Ewan's saying. If you went to a proper shop, they'd steer you towards the Lumix. But the Best Buy, the Jessups, the, you know, walking to the shop, I need a camera, what can you sell me? Oh, this has just come in, it's very nice. I think, you know, It's sort of like the LG. You know, I remember when LG first started making televisions. You know, it was like, well, how are they going to compete with Sony and JVC and Toshiba? And I don't know what the sales of televisions are, but I bet you LG might be number one. You know, I think it's things like this. I think it's, you know, the companies like LG, they had to make something that was good before they could even start to get into the marketplace. There was no point of them making rubbish that was cheap. They had to make something good that was valuable. I think there's a place for another manufacturer. I always think it's healthier for the rest of us. But again, if this can be very, very high end and it can be very, very good, but if it's overpriced, it's not going to get anywhere because of the label. But I mean, I wish them luck. I mean, I always think it's a nice idea that someone else comes in and shakes up all the other competitors. So, you know, let's see what happens.
Absolutely.
We'll keep our eye on it because if it comes out at, you know, £100, then we all might take a second look. But if Ewan is going with his gut, which he's usually right.
Gosh, thanks.
We probably won't see it do anything. So, but I like the looks of it. Are we all in agreement to that? Can we agree that we like the looks of it?
I like the looks of it.
It's a nice dance floor camera.
Oh, that's as good as it's going to get. All right, let's move on now to our last piece of news this week. And this is very much a concept, very much something, again, that I would be very much interested in because I'm so in love with my iPhone 4 of taking pictures with it. To me, that's my compact camera right now. I mean, that's the one I do. It's easy. It's there. Whip it out. What is this thing called? The Olo Clip? The Olo Clip?
Yeah,
I guess it's a concept thing right now.
Well, it's beyond concept. They're waiting for production, aren't they?
But yeah, I was going to say, that's a little premature. I mean, it's going to be $45 if they can get enough people interested in this thing, or possibly $60 if, you know, if they're a little bit low, that they don't have as much interest in this thing. But I think it looks, it's interesting. It's like three lenses in one.
Yeah, the way it works is that they've got this idea that when they get $15,000 of backing, they'll then go into production with this thing because they've covered their costs. In order to get one of the first ones and be a backer, you've got to give them $45, so you're getting it cheap. If you're going to buy the production model afterwards and you're not one of the original backers of the 15 grand, then it's going to cost you $60 for every single one that you buy. But are you really going to pay $60 for something to clip on the corner of your iPhone to give you 10 times macro and wide angle?
No, but I would definitely pay $29.95 through television.
Exactly. This is a KTEL product through and through.
KTEL or not, KTEL had some crap. Some of the stuff between the grooves on those records was okay. Sometimes it was the original artist. Most of the time it wasn't. But there was some things that were good about it. I mean, could we see if it's $29.95, $19.95, it could be yours today. I mean, wouldn't you get this for your iPhone just to say, that, hey, what the heck? It's worth a try.
$20 sold.
But it won't be $20. Okay, we're back to price. It's the price war today. On the podcast, it won't be $20 though.
I mean, the only thing I feel, I was looking at that thinking, okay, right, the fisheye, completely pointless. You could do that afterwards on a computer.
Yeah,
the only thing that makes any sense with any of these things is, well, you've got two things. If you can widen the viewing angle, e.g., you know, make it a wider angle lens, then I can see some sort of point to that, because that's not something that you can do electronically afterwards. If you know, if you can't get the whole picture in, you can't get it in. Mm. And that's, you know, that's just the way it is. So a wider angle lens, you know, that makes some sense. And possibly a decent macro. You know, I think a decent macro, because, I mean, the iPhone 4, you know, it's a fairly good camera. But, you know, it does miss out on being able to shoot very close up on things. So, I mean, some of the other functionality of this thing, like I say, the fisheye is a bit pointless. But, you know, to say there's certain things that, you know, you can actually get the camera to take and you can't electronically play around with it afterwards is a, you know, it's a nice idea. But possibly they should, I don't know, maybe incorporate it into a case of some sort. If you had a case like, you know, those battery packs, whatever they're called, Morpheus or something, I can't remember what they're called.
Mophie, yeah.
Now, if you had like a slide on the back of your Mophie that you could slide over the bit over the, because at the moment I'm pretty sure they have a hole for the camera. But if you had like a slide function where you could slide over a lens converter that was all built into it, that then added the functionality of either macro or wider angle, then I think that would be a really good idea.
I think,
but to have it as a separate entity that does nothing else other than make a mediocre camera do something slightly better, I think it's, you know, how long are you going to, you might buy this and how long are you going to keep it for, all of 20 minutes?
You're going to say something, Ewan? Go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, I agree with that entirely. If you want to just widen the field of view on the iPhone camera, that's one of the limiting factors. It's very, very tight in comparison to other handheld cameras and compacts. You'd want something just that little bit wider. It's got that lens within it. If you talk about the fisheye pointless, agree entirely with Alex on that one. And I agree that it'd be nice to have a macro, but I think the problem is not going to be the product then when they go to the macro. The problem is going to be the iPhone, because it is impossible to shoot with the iPhone with any kind of steadiness in your hand. You're using your finger in a very unnatural position to dab the camera icon on the touchscreen. Or to use the, you know, to make it actually happen. The best thing that ever happened was Camera Pro putting the use of the volume button to trigger the lens. And why Apple didn't embrace that, because it would have just made the iPhone 4 camera so much more functional. You stick a macro lens on this thing, you're going to get fantastic views every time you try and take the picture. You've got to bear in mind, you've got extremely sensitive depth of field with macro because of the focal length, and you're then going to get a lot of shake on the camera when you try and take the picture, and you're going to get crap results with this.
I've often wondered, I mean, the more I see these things and the more we talk about it, it's like every time I get excited when I see it. And to be honest with you, after we do the show and I see these things and I talk to you guys, I'm no longer excited anymore. In fact, I'm slightly depressed because I feel like no matter what we do, we all know iPhone, great camera, but is that as good as it's going to get? iPhone, good camera, screw the added accessories, forget trying to put a telescope on the end of the damn thing, just use it as it's supposed to be and wait for Apple to come out with a better camera or a better phone next time.
I think
you want a better camera.
You've got to be careful what you're judging these things on. Now, if you were showing me these things on the Mac show as novelty products at 20 to 30, you know, or even 15 to 20 pounds, I'd get excited about them just like you are. But you're not. You're showing them on a photography show, and the photographers on the show are saying, but they're not going to take nice pictures. They're not going to improve what you've currently got. The iPhone 4 takes a nice picture. It's fine. It's dandy. You could publish from it to a commercial level for reportage. But you start throwing these things on it, and you're sticking something else between the camera and the image, and what you're sticking between it is not a significantly high quality because it's selling for 20 to 30 pounds. So all of a sudden now, you're asking on a photography podcast whether this is a good photographic attachment. The answer's always going to be no, it's not.
No.
On a Mac show, it's going to be fantastic because it's about Instagram and those kind of things. On a photography podcast, no. This is not going to be good enough. It's going to deteriorate the quality of your images. You're never going to be able to use them commercially, but you probably don't want to anyway.
Speaking of that, we do offer a Mac show here on the Bagel Tech Working. Tune to that next if you're watching us live. I see exactly where you're coming from, Ewan. Mm. And yeah, that's exactly right. Period.
I'm going
to
shut up now
because I got no other comment. I'm going to ask Alex if he's got anything else to add to our little add-on piece of crap.
Yeah, just to sort of back up what Ewan just said, I mean, there's a reason why a good fixed macro lens costs between £200 and £300, because that's what it costs to make a good macro lens.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't cost you $60. You know, that's just the fact. I mean, the reason why all these add-ons and things for the iPhones don't work is because the iPhone's a phone that just happens to have a camera in it. And for what limitations it has, it does it quite well. But, you know, it's like having a push bike and then putting a load of spoilers on it. It's not really going to improve the performance of the push bike. If you've got like a 700 horsepower big American Mustang and you put some spoilers on it, it might have some sort of effect. So, you know, it's like adding... The limitation of the iPhone 4 is what it is. That's what you get, and that's why it's an extra on your phone. If you want to put an extra on a camera, then buy a camera and then buy an extra. Don't try and put, you know, rubbish on mediocre. It's not going to improve anything.
Mm. Yeah, it's KTEL all over again.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. The concept is a lovely idea. It's a very clever concept. But,
and I think that's what, you know, we're
our drawers are full
about.
Of clever concepts. That's how a car boot sales and garage sales and all the other things.
And eBay.
Yeah.
eBay. Guys, how about some cheap stuff, crap, all that this week? I won't say the other word that's here in our show notes.
Yes, we'll start with you.
Who wants to go first? Who wants to go first?
Go on, Alex.
Yeah, I just, I mean, actually, I saw Ewan writing something down while I wasn't paying any attention. I thought, you know what? That's a really good idea. I better come up with something quick. The other night, I was sitting there, and it was really, really cloudy. And for some reason, I just thought, I haven't taken a moonshot for ages. And I actually went to the trouble of getting some cameras out, and the cloud didn't clear, so I gave up with the idea of it. But I was thinking, that was something I really used to enjoy doing, taking some really good pictures of the moon. And I thought, well, another thing I did do years ago is I used to leave the shutters open on, it was a film camera, so I think it was the B setting.
Bulb.
Yeah. And I just used to leave the shutter open. And, you know, I didn't know what I was going to get. And then what was nice with film, you didn't know what you were going to get until you got your prints back. It's not like you could review it and go, oh, I'll take another one of them. So I'd take one shot at 5 seconds of the stars, then I'd take another one at 20, then I'd leave it for half an hour, and then I'd leave it for 5 hours, you know, go to bed, come back and take off again.
Someone had nicked the camera.
You beg your pardon?
Someone had nicked the camera.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
It's all right, mate, I don't live in Birmingham. But
they left a roll of film for you.
Yeah, exactly. But Yeah, I mean, some of these things, I mean, with digital camera, obviously, it makes life a lot easier. But, you know, when you're photographing stars, especially if you're somewhere where you haven't got too much light pollution, the effects and you know, what you get, you wouldn't necessarily understand, but it will show you the way the Earth is moving, the way we're spinning and various things like that. And you can get some really lovely effects. So I would say, you know, we're getting to the nicer time of year where we should have clearer skies. Have a go at photographing the moon. I mean, the trick with the moon, it's quite a short exposure because of the moon and the Earth, because they're actually quite close. If you give it any sort of length of exposure, and you have different times of the year, different things, but have a practice, because you'll see it very, very quickly goes out of focus because things are moving a lot quicker than you realize they are. It won't stay sharp if you give it more than a second or two. So with the moon, it's quite a quick shot, but with the stars, practice, just have a test. Leave it for 2 minutes and you'll be able to see actually in your picture the stars are moving. Well, then obviously we are, but you can see the path that they're moving across the sky. And also, the longer you leave it, it's the same way as the radio telescopes work, etc. The longer you leave it, the things that you can't see with the naked eye, they start to appear. So you'll see, you might only with your eye see 3 or 4 stars. You leave it for half an hour and go and have a look, and you'll see 300 or 400 stars. So it's good fun, it's good interest, and it does explain to children how it all works. And, you know, for that reason, I think it's good fun anyway.
Alex, is that your cheap thing because the moon and stars are free?
Yeah, well, how much cheaper can you get?
Exactly.
You know, it's funny, you're saying about the moon. I took it was a few years ago, it was with one of the old iPhones. I took a picture of the moon. It's actually up there on our Flickr group account.
Very good.
Very good.
Moon's a good subject. It smiles back at you.
Yeah, exactly. But you zoom in, what is quite wonderful, you start getting a slight, you know, using a camera with a long zoom, and you can start filling up. The amount of things you can actually pick up on the moon. You get the right time of year and you get the right shadow on the moon, you can see craters, you can photograph them, and it's very humbling.
Except with an iPhone. Just looks like a big bright dot. No, great tip, Alex. Yeah, and the moon is a beautiful, if you get a clear night with the stars and everything, it does make for a fantastic picture. It really, really does. It's breathtaking. Great, and cheap and free. Ewan, what about you? You got something cheap and free and easy on the budget?
Sorry, I was holding my breath, just about to pass out. Mine is dead simple. Get yourself a black sheet and a black background, or some black sugar paper or something like that. Go in a dark room, get yourself a toy car and spray the car black with matte black paint, and then put some black thread around it, and then put some light sources on the camera and expose them for 30 seconds, something like that, and pull them in front of the lens of the camera in different directions and see what happens. Really cool one, if you're brave, is to stick a candle, wax a candle onto the top of the car, and then pull the candle in front, because laterally moving candles are fantastic because of the bend with the wind resistance and that kind of stuff. Mm. You can get some fabulous effects. And just alter your exposure time. Just go for anything from 1/60th all the way up to maybe 5 minutes, you know, whatever you fancy. And the other one is, if you're looking for a good backdrop for a black and white photo, you can't beat a paving slab. Go and get yourself a paving slab, put it down on the ground, put some garden tools or something like that on it, or knife and fork even, and shoot it, and then transfer it into black and white when you get into Photoshop. You get some really impacting images, really high contrast, and really grungy. Really good. There you go.
Cool do. Yeah, and it's cheap. And it's cheap.
Haven't easy heard the word grungy for a while.
Grunge, yeah, I love grunge.
good tips, guys, and both free. Well, kind of free anyways, using a little bit of money, but not too much at all, so yeah. Questions, shall we get into them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's do it. First question is actually from Ben. It says, hi guys, loving the show, keep on going, please. I guess he's a loyal fan, so thanks very much, Ben, for listening. Straight question for Alex. So this is only addressed to you, Alex. I want to buy a new camera. I've decided that he wants Nikon, so all the more, that's why he's interested to you. He says he has an old lens from an uncle, and he wanted to know whether to buy the D7000 or the D300. He said he can afford both, but he wants to see which one you would choose. I see good and bad in both, but want Alex's point of view. Sorry, Ewan.
There you go. So it's quite a simple question. I mean, simple answer, really. The D7000 is a very nice, does everything camera. It does video very well, takes pictures very well. But, I mean, it's, what's it, 16.2, 16.4 megapixel camera? I mean, it does it all nicely, but, nicely, great, wonderful. The D300S is... it's only 12 megapixels and it doesn't do video as well, but it is a better camera. It has better focus. It has, you know, faster focus. It's the bottom end of the Nikon professional range. So what I would say is, if you're more interested in film than you are, well, not more interested. If you're interested in film, then buy the D7000. If you're interested in getting a better photograph, then buy the D300S. Both of them do the similar things, but the D300S does the photographing a lot better, but the D7000 does the video a lot better. So that's your quandary.
The D300 shoots
S,
and 300S shoots video.
Yeah, it shoots it, but it's nowhere near as good. The D7000 is built basically as a, does both things quite well, whereas the D300S is a still camera with video added. It's a better camera, even though it's got less megapixels. It's a better sensor, it's certainly got better focus, it's got the full 51 point autofocus, where the other one's got the broken 20 point autofocus. You know, it's much of a muchness, but the video is better on the 7000, but the D300S is a better stills camera.
I can't find it, but isn't one of them full frame?
No, neither of them are full frame. The 700 that's full frame, not the 7000.
Oh, right, okay. I've got it in my head that it was one of them was a full frame. Sorry.
No, they're both three quarter.
Thank you.
The D7000 is your pick, Alex.
If you want to do video, then there's no question. Mm. The D7000 is better for video. It's full HD, where the 300 isn't full HD.
All right. Hence the bigger number. So it's either the D300 smaller number, D7000 does more bigger number.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Cool. Next question. Last question for this week, guys. We're only going to get to two this week. Hi, guys. Love the show. This is from Greg. He says, with all the nice weather that you've been enjoying there in the UK, which I guess is kind of a treat for you guys, isn't it? I have been out with the kids and have taken lots of pictures. I've tried to follow the Norman Parkinson advice and keep up the sun behind me on the subject, but there have been several times where the kids in the shade and the background have meant that there are silhouettes. I know that there are perhaps a number of ways to solve this problem, both when I shoot and in Photoshop, but I would love to know what Alex and Ewan think would be best. So I'll go to you actually first, Ewan, since you didn't get to speak much last time. Go ahead.
Same as always, fix it when you take the picture rather than fix it in Photoshop afterwards. So if you're going to shoot kids in shade with a light background, you're going to need a fill flash. You're going to have to illuminate them in some way to get it to work properly. If you really absolutely can't do that, then it's one of those instances where shooting in RAW is definitely going to help, because you can bring up highlights and take down contrasts against backgrounds to make the image look better. If you're stuffed and you can only shoot in JPEG, then I'm afraid you're into things like the Dodge tool, which you take your life in your hands with the Dodge tool on Photoshop. Sometimes you'll get something really, really good, and other times you'll get utter crap. The other thing is just to think about what's important in the image. Is it the kids or is it the background? And if you blow out the background, it's not the end of the world as long as you've captured the kids. So meter off the kids rather than metering off the background. Go for a spot metering instead of evaluative.
Cool. Anything to add, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, that's all great. I mean, in Photoshop, there is a shadow and highlight function once you've processed the picture. But I always find it gives you a very, very odd contrast on the things that you've brought up.
You get very grainy as well, doesn't it?
Beg your pardon, sir?
It's very grainy in the darkened
areas. Yeah, it's not particularly good. The other way you can do it, again, post-taking it, if you know you've got the problem and you've got a tripod, shoot two images. Shoot the first one of the kids, get the kids right, etc., and then shoot the second one and meter off the background, and then you can just combine the two images. I mean, sometimes you can't get the picture you want. It's just not possible. unless you set up the picture yourself, if you just want to take a picture because your kid's doing something really interesting, then you've got to shoot it. But I would always say, get rid of the background. Don't worry about it. Take the picture of your kid. You know, even if you have to use a fake, you know, refocus the picture afterwards in Photoshop, blur out the background if it's gone. Get your kids right and everything else will be fine.
Great.
Cool deal. Cool deal. Guys, have we got time for one more? Because I do have one more.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, great. Let's do one more then. Usually, this is actually from Marga. I guess she's a new listener, and she's checking out the photo show, and she normally listens to our Mac show here on the network, but she's not sure enough of being, I guess, a photographer or joining in the photo, but or a photo podcast, but had a problem, wondering if you guys could help. She has a Panasonic Lumix compact camera and uses it to capture family moments and days, not really so much the artistic thing. She's noticed that sometimes when she takes a picture of the kids, they're in full length, their faces look a little out of focus. Why is this happening, and what can she do to stop this? Who wants to take it first?
Alex?
Yeah, I mean, quite often when you've got, you know, taking full length pictures and you've got some focus issue, it tends to be because you're zoomed in on full zoom. Compact cameras, you know, they are good. They're great, but they don't have the abilities of some of the, you know, the bigger lenses. I mean, on bigger lenses, you get soft focus at the end. So on compact cameras, you probably have a lot more trouble. If you are having trouble, if you can, then give more background around the picture. The camera probably, I don't know what you've got it set up on. A lot of these take the focus. I don't even know on some of these small compacts if you can tell it what part of the picture to focus on. So if you are having problems where you've got, you know, if you've got a full length person, the chances are you've got also got a very large background around them, and the camera is quite likely focusing on the background and not on the, you know, the people themselves. So pull back a little bit and see if you can center the person in the middle. Then focus lock on their face, because I'm pretty sure they still all have focus lock.
Yeah.
Then move the camera to where you want to place the person. But it sounds like the camera is automatically taking its focal point, but it's not taking it from the subject. And normally, if it doesn't know what to do, it will take the focus point from the very middle of the picture. Mm-hmm. So pull back, get the face, if that's obviously the most important part. Focus on the face, wait, you'll probably get a beep or you'll get a green light in the eyepiece, then move to the place you want while you're still half pressing the shutter down, and then take your picture and you shouldn't have any problem.
I think I'd look at the camera settings as well, Margaret, because if you're shooting on full auto mode, even from the sort of the DMC range series upwards, the Panasonic Lumix are very good for facial recognition. They do very, very well with that. So I'm guessing if you're not getting faces in focus, the chances are you're probably shooting in program mode or you're shooting in one of the other priority modes. Let the camera take over if you're really struggling and see what happens. If that comes back and it's in focus, then I'm sorry, but it's you. if the full auto mode is not, and you have got face recognition, is not gathering the image properly on the faces, take it back to a camera shop and see if they can have a look at it. It might be faulty.
Yeah, there's always that option. But also remembering, if people are wearing hats and things like that, if their faces are in the shade, the camera is going to focus on the lighter part of the image.
Yeah.
Cool deal, guys. Good deals. Like I said, we answer your questions the best we can, and hopefully we can help you out. You can get your questions, send them to us. Simple to do. BagelTechPhoto@gmail.com, and we will get to yours each and every week, or at least we'll try to anyways. If not, we'll carry it over and do it, of course, on the next week's show. We do get a lot of them in, but keep them coming, because we will answer them. Before we close out this week's show, I got to give, as always, UK2.net. My God, I mean, I don't know. we'd be with the network without them. They keep us afloat. They keep us alive. They got great things going on with the Bagel Tech Network right now. If you, if you're outgrowing your own server, outgrowing the room on it, check out UK2's prices over there. Just go to BagelTechNews.com and you'll click right through there. You'll see it towards the bottom of the page there. Use our click through. That way they know we're sending you. And you can take advantage right now. They're actually giving out certain things, you, and they're giving out even iPads if you sign up for certain services.
That's right. Yeah, you sign up for the co-location services, you're going to get a free iPad anyway. And if you even just buy a domain at £1.79, you're going to get entered into a draw for an iPad. So there's lots to do. The other thing to say with them is they've added 10 new nodes to our server because of the demand that we've had just recently. So whatever you do, you know, if you're listening just now, stop what you're doing. Go to BagelTechNews.com, go down to the logo, click on it, and it registers a click through from us. And they're happy with that. That's what they want. They just want you visiting their site from our site. That's all we need. Just please do that, and you will keep Bagel Tech on air.
Please, please, please do. And also, if you can and you love the show, go into iTunes, give us some reviews there, because it does really, really help us in our standings with iTunes there, and it gets the word out more for people to tune into this show and of course all the shows on the Bagel Tech Network. And of course, you can find all the shows just going to BagelTechNews.com. You can check out everything that we have here on the network. It's the time of the show. Where can we get a hold of you guys, Ewan? Where can we get a hold of you?
You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, and I've also got a website up now, a new one, ewanrankin.co.uk. I've gone for the minimalist, slimmed-down look, and it looks pretty punchy, actually. I've got some nice comments from people. Thank you very much.
Sweet. I didn't even know it was there.
Yeah.
I'll go check it out after the show, I click through the UK tune thing. You, or Alex, should I say, where can we find you? I pretty much know, but you live there now.
Yeah, I live there. I live at Alex G. Fox on Twittery thing.
Thing there, as always. Go. Yeah, we have some nice conversations. Actually, you have more conversations with my wife than we do.
Well, you know, more in common. Yeah. See, we both know you. That's why we've got something in common.
That's right. You're talking behind my back. I know you guys. At least you do it in public, and I appreciate that. If anybody's bothered, you can find me on Twitter as well, twitter.com/KyleSwagger. We will be back here next week, as always, with the latest happenings in photography news. We do hope you will join us 11 a.m. Eastern, or Eastern Standard Time, UK time, 11 a.m. UK time for the photo show, followed by the Mac show, as always, live at 1 p.m. And then, of course, the Bagel Tech Big Show with our Bagel Broadcast Friday at 10 p.m. right here on the Bagel Tech Network. We hope you will join us, and we hope to see you. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week right here on Bagel Tech Photo.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.